Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing an interview I did with actor, singer, dancer, director, musical director, Kenny Green. Kenny is here in Sarasota directing the very first production of the West Coast Black Theater Troupe season, The Wiz. Listen to this exuberant man talk about how he managed to hold on to his passion for everything theatrical, even though he was born into a definitely, dramatically athletic family who didn't quite understand where this singing, dancing, intrigued little boy came from. So hang on, here come the show.
Inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. From nowhere, sitting in my own soft lap, with all the time for us to chat, and my resources all on tap. Oh,
don't you care enough, this I might be alone.
Hello, and welcome to The Lynn Show. As you probably know, the music that we came in on, Easing Down the Road, is from the Broadway musical, The Wiz. And I opened the show with The Wiz because the interview I'm doing today with Kenny Green, because Kenny Green, whose interview I am airing today, is here directing The Wiz. And in addition to hearing Kenny's story, you will hear several more songs from the show. The Lynn Show is about being the person you really are. And like Kenny, I interview people who make their living or their life with an art, and I do this because when you listen to them, you can hear what it sounds like to be the person that you really are, the person you were meant to be. Unfortunately, it is my experience as a psychotherapist that lots of people are not living the life they were meant to be, are not demonstrating the person they really are. In fact, they are in denial for important aspects of themselves. So many of us have had experiences in our childhood which taught us that something about us was not all right. Something that we did, or the way that we behaved, or something that we thought, or something we were drawn to, or a behavior, or even something about the way we looked, was not all right. It didn't go down well with our family of origin, the first and most important influence in our lives. But not only our family of origin has the capacity to let us know that something about us is not okay. Peers, teachers, religious organizations, cultural organizations, all have an impact. If you hear often enough from people that matter to you that something about you is not all right, then you have a tendency to believe it. I know a young woman whose family told her that she was beautiful, and she believed it until she got out in the world and people told her that something about her skin color was not attractive. And that powerful message influenced the way she felt about herself, even though her family continued to tell her that she was beautiful. When we are convinced that something about us is going to bring us a consequence that we don't want, then what most people do is, first, they try and alter it or pretend it's not there. No, I really don't laugh like that. I really don't, I'm really not interested in drawing. Whatever it is that brought the disappointment, the disapproval, the neglect, the teasing. We hear so much about bullying these days. And kids get bullied over things over which they have no control. The kind of clothes they wear, that's the kind of clothes their parents bought them. The color of their hair, or the shape of their face, or the way that they eat. All these things which are spontaneous, natural, over which we have no control. So when something like that is criticized, we are made to feel bad about it. If we can change it, we quite often do. Now, in the case of the young woman whose skin color was getting a lot of attention, there's not much she can do about that. But things like the way we talk or walk or eat or the kinds of things that interest us. I interviewed the other day a young man who was terribly interested in toys as a young man, and he got an awful lot of flack for it. Little boys were not supposed to play with the toys he was interested in. Well, if you do what most of us do, and that is try and pretend that you aren't this person, if you do that well enough, then you can forget, really, that you were that person. You can forget that you had this interest, that you laughed out loud when you were happy, that you demonstrated your distress when you were unhappy or cry or got angry. If you do that well enough, then you can forget that you have that quality. And you can come into adulthood without access to some of the things that are really important about you. And that is not an easy way to live. If you have to be in denial for aspects of yourself, you pretty much always know there's something wrong. You always feel that you are somehow flawed, or you are somehow a fake, or there's something about you which, if people knew it, they wouldn't like you. This is a terrible way to live. So the Linjo is about saying, unfortunately, this happens to too many of us. But if it happened to you, if there was something that you were drawn to as a child, maybe you were really interested in buildings, you really loved what buildings looked like, and if left to your own devices, you might have become a builder or an architect or a draftsperson. But people thought that was silly, and who cares about what buildings look like? So you put aside that passion, that interest. Or maybe the very first time you said no, you got, in no uncertain terms, the response that that was not acceptable. So maybe now, when you need to say no, you're not able to. If any of these things happen to you and you're aware of it, it may not be too late to recover pieces of the person you really are. So if you want to talk to me about that, you can find me at my website, thelynshow.com. thelynshow. Don't leave the E out of Lynn. And now I'm going to play another song from The Wiz, and then I'm going to play my interview with Kenny Green. Kenny Green is an exception to the rule. Kenny knew right off the bat what he was, who he was, what he was drawn to, what he was passionate about. And it didn't go down well in a lot of places in his life, but somehow Kenny managed to hold on to it. And as a result, we have a human being who is spending his life spreading the joy and delight of theater in every possible way it can be spread. So here now is another song from The Wiz and my interview with Kenny.
You've come from a different place, and I know you've traveled far. Now that you've told me what it is, I better point you toward the wind. Power's his.
Okay, I am here with Kenny Green, and I'm interviewing Kenny because he's directing the very first production of the West Coast Black Theater Troupe season called The Wiz.
Yes.
Right. Okay, great. All right. Good. So I'm explaining to Kenny that I interview people who make their living or their life with an art.
Yes.
And it's clear that the art to which you are giving your life is the art of theater directing?
It's the art of musical theater, directing, and performing as well.
Ah, yes. Okay. So I only ask one question.
Yes.
And it is, do you remember the very first time in your life when you were drawn to performing, to music, to theater?
I can. First time. I'm from Fresno, California.
Mm-hmm.
I was born there. And the very first time, we took a class field trip. I had to have been third or fourth grade.
7, 8, 9, like that?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to the Fresno Memorial Auditorium to see Peter Pan. And I remember applauding for Tinkerbell to come back to life. But I was more intrigued with the fact that Tinkerbell was a spotlight. And I distinctly remember looking at the back of the theater, trying to find out, well, who is doing that? Like, why is that happening? And I thought about that for months and months and months and months. And then eventually I ended up in school chorus, and then...
Whoa, slow down. Okay, so if you wound up in school chorus, it suggests that you were singing before that.
I was singing in church choir, yeah.
Yes.
I would sing along to the radio in the car, and I loved the oldies were like the Temptations, and I would sing along, and I knew all the words at a young age, and probably drove my mother crazy.
Well, so you were drawn to music very young.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and church choir, how old and all that, do you know?
Church choir, around the same time, 6, 7, 8. We had a children's choir that I just stayed in the choir until I was into high school.
Okay, all right. So it's clear that music drew you. Maybe that was the first thing that drew you.
But yeah, definitely music. I've always loved to sing. I've always loved music. Fascinated with the piano.
Oh, did you play?
I did play. I still do play the piano.
Really? So did you take lessons? Or?
I took some lessons and some self-taught, a little bit of both.
Yeah?
And eventually I picked up the trumpet, and I'm a trumpet player. So music is...
Yeah, right. So clearly music was the first draw.
Yes.
Right? And Tinkerbell, that was a technical thing, right?
Very technical.
Right, that you wanted to know how this was being done, right? Okay. So now this is... this starts very young in your life?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like we said, 7 or 8, and then... I guess... I would have to say... like 5th or 6th grade, by that point I was always hanging out in the cafeteria, which was a cafetorium, so it had a little stage and, you know, wings and stuff. And we never did plays, they were just for assemblies, but I was always in the back playing with the ropes and playing with the lights and turning them on. Stuff I should have been in trouble for, but... I got away with it.
Yeah. Well, so what's so interesting, I mean, this is really interesting. So it wasn't only the performance aspect of it that drew you, but the whole thing about how it worked.
Yeah.
Right?
How all the pieces fit together. I wanted to know, and I still do, I want to know everything.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that puts it together, I want to be a part of in some sort of way, or should at least know. And if I don't know, I will always ask questions.
All right. Okay. So this is elementary school, junior high or middle school, high school. You're in the chorus.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a drama club or
acting? In high school, there was a drama club, and I was a part of it sophomore year through senior year. But we hadn't done a musical. We did plays.
You did straight plays?
We did straight plays. We did black comedy, which is one of my favorites to this day, and we did... I was in MASH. I played Spear Chucker Jones.
Wow.
he dies in Act Two. And then I played, and then finally, after I believe 20 years, my high school finally decided to do a musical. And we did South Pacific.
Oof.
And I played Lieutenant Cable.
Wow.
And I It was, once again, dies in the second act.
Yes, that's right.
It's destined to die in shows. And I was obsessed.
Ah.
Absolutely obsessed after that. And there was just no turning back.
Well, so we have acting also now. Mm-hmm. So was there any training in high school? I mean, did they teach you anything?
We did. I was, Mrs. Palermo was my high school teacher. She was also the English teacher. And we had a thing called 0 hour period, which started at 6 o'clock in the morning if you wanted to do theater.
Mm.
And we'd go in, school at 6 o'clock in the morning.
You had to really want to do it.
Mm-hmm. It was not offered as a typical elective.
Right. It's amazing that they offered that.
Yeah.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah. The year that I did it, which is junior year of high school, it was the first year in California that had even been discussed and that we could get credit for it. So we were like the experimental class. I don't know if they're still doing it or not, but we did it for 2 years.
Okay, so you show up at 6:30 in the morning, and uh-huh. What happens?
If you're in a play, then you'll rehearse the play. Oh. That's when rehearsals will be, and you get credit, class credit for it. And we also had a thing called the National Forensics League.
Oh, yes.
And I was a member of that as well.
That's kind of like a debate team, right?
Debate's part of it. Mm-hmm. There's debate, Lincoln-Douglas debate. There's and then there's different acting categories. You weren't allowed to have scene partners until later on in life, but our year it was humorous interpretation, so you could do a comedic piece, dramatic interpretation, OPP, which was original prose and poetry, so you had to write it yourself. I think those were the three major, and you could get your high school letter in it.
Wow.
So if you placed a certain tier, then you'd get a letter in it. So I lettered in dramatic interpretation.
wait, there was no musical.
There was no musical.
But you were already skilled enough in acting. Skilled. You must have taken this very seriously very young.
I did.
Yeah,
I did.
Right.
I did. And while doing that in school, there was also an outside group called the King Musical Theater Company. And I had done Guys and Dolls with them.
That was out of school?
Out of school.
Was that community theater?
Yeah, community theater in a different city.
And you auditioned?
I auditioned.
Oh, hold on. So you said to your parents, I need to audition here?
Well, I didn't ask them.
You didn't? I see.
I did not ask them.
So when you got the role, you said, oh, guess what?
Basically.
And they said, oh... Okay, I guess.
They were just like, make sure your grades don't fall, and do we have to pay anything for you to be part of this?
Right.
And the answer was no, and I said, I won't. And so for them, I did Guys and Dolls and played...
Who were you?
Nicely Johnson.
Well, you don't die in the second one.
I didn't die in the second one.
But you go...
But I ate a lot of cheesecake.
Yeah, right. Yes, and you get to rock the boat.
I get to rock the boat.
That's maybe the best tune in the... Well, it isn't, but that was a great number.
It's a great number.
Yeah, that's great.
And then I did a back to back. The next show was The Music Man.
Oh my.
And, I I was part of the quartet, which was fun.
Yeah.
I loved it. And me and, myself and two of my best friends in high school, we were also part of a barbershop quartet, and we competed in barbershop competition and while we were in the marching band. So basically...
Oh, my God. You didn't have a heartbeat of a second.
No.
Running from here to there. I'm singing here. I'm acting there. I'm marching there.
I was never home and or in class. So there was... We had competitions. And
right.
So I had a lot of makeup homework to do. And I don't know if the high school still has this or not, but after I graduated, when my brother went in, there was a Kenny Green clause where you could not miss, and it was like written that way, you could not miss X amount of days of school or else you wouldn't walk the line in graduation.
Even if you got good grades.
Even if you got
good grades. They didn't care. They wanted you to show up.
Yeah. I was never there.
Well, but that's awful.
Yeah.
Because if you can do it, I mean, this is just some kind of rigid...
It is. And my school at the time... they didn't know what to do with us theater kids.
Yeah,
it was
I'll
new
bet
to them.
That's right, yeah.
And we had a working farm on campus. It was an agricultural high school.
I see.
So ag and definitely the football team were the most important things.
I see.
But as far as the arts, they didn't know what to do with us.
Oh, my God. All right. So at some point here, are you thinking, this is what I want to do with my life?
Oh, I knew. By the time I graduated high school, I knew.
Okay. So did you tell your parents?
I did. I did. And they were like, oh, that's interesting. Okay. And they're very, very athletic family. And I was not. I did try to play baseball once, and I remember sitting in the outfield just singing songs to myself.
Oh, yeah.
Not really playing at all.
Right.
But by the time I graduated, there's a bigger theater, community theater company called Good Company Players, Roger Rocca's Dinner Theater, which is in Fresno. And they've had a lot of, I didn't know this at the time, a lot of Broadway alum have come from there. Audra McDonald is from there, and her last show there was Evita, I think. And I just thought, oh, they're doing Joseph, so I'm going to go audition. And I did, and I got the role of Joseph.
Sheesh.
And the rest is history. I was attending Fresno State.
Oh, well, hold on.
Yes.
So you're going to go to college,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to major in?
English.
English, because they wanted you to have something to fall back on.
Sure.
As your parents said, all right, fine, but study something that...
I think my mother was just happy that I was finally out of her house. We are the best of friends, but I don't think we should live together. So I think she was happy.
So she really didn't understand.
She really did. It wasn't her thing. Mother was a track star.
She must be wondering, and where did he come from?
Yeah,
right.
Seriously, this doesn't run. My grandmother doesn't sing. My aunt doesn't sing. So everybody was really confused.
Yes, right. So they really not only didn't your school know what to do with you, but your family really didn't know what to
really
do with
you.
Right. Okay. So, but you didn't major in theater.
No, I did not.
No, right. So you're going to school now. You're majoring in English. But are you doing theater?
I am. I spent 3 years at Good Company Players. And
this is on the side.
This is on the side, outside of school.
Right.
And they...
In 3 years, that means that you became a part of the ensemble?
Of the company, yeah.
Oh, you became a part of the company.
Yeah.
Did you have to audition?
You had to audition for every show. They did 6 shows a year. Each show was about... 4 weeks of rehearsal and 2.5 months of
the run.
And it was 8 shows a week. It was a typical Broadway schedule. And so it was crazy. It was
yet
crazy.
Again.
Yet again. And I'm a workaholic.
Clearly.
But I didn't know what that was then. I was just having fun.
Yeah. And you had a lot of energy. Not everybody could have done this.
No, I don't think so. And to me, it's normal. I still live my life that way now.
Right, right.
I just go.
Well, hold on. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
So, okay, so what are you doing in school if you're doing 8 shows a week at the, you know, I mean, you have a rehearsal schedule, you've got this school, right?
I'm literally driving around trying to make it all work.
Yeah.
I would be stuck in traffic with my book on the steering wheel trying to read up the chapter.
Yeah.
Or on my way to rehearsal trying to memorize my lines.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Okay. And in school, are you studying anything that has to do with theater, or you're just
not
being a straight ahead? Oh, my gosh.
Not a thing.
So you haven't had very much training.
No.
This is all just natural stuff, right?
Yeah, just natural. And with the 3 years at Good Company Players, some of the best training I ever got was
directors.
The directors being in the show with most of my friends were at least 20 years my senior, and I would just sit and talk with them and
suck it up.
Just suck it all up and take it in. One lady in particular, we were doing Hello Dolly, and her name was Clydie Ramsey, who was a principal at one of the, Fresno has 3 arts magnet schools that I didn't know existed. And Clydie was the principal of one of them. Anyway, she played our Dolly in Hello Dolly, and I just fell in love with her. Mm-hmm. I thought her and her husband Jay, I thought they were just the most amazing people. Still think she's one of the most amazing people. And I just remember sitting backstage, and her and the owner of the company, Dan Pisano, he played Horace Mann together. And just watching them together, to me, was a masterclass.
Yes.
I just watched their rehearsal every day. And I loved it.
Were they much older than you? Oh, you said 20 years, like, mostly?
Yeah, well, Clydie, at this point, I was just 19 years old. 18. So Clydie was probably well into her 40s, as was Dan.
So, in a way, they were your artistic parents.
Basically.
You know?
Basically.
Right.
Dan... If that man wanted me to do anything, I was doing school tours. In the mornings, we'd get up at 6 in the morning.
Yet again.
And there was a different show that we'd do until we drive around in this van, and we would do shows until about noon to different schools. Mostly about, one was called Judge It, which was basically how to be a better person, how to treat other people, judge the situation. They're educational tours.
Yeah, right.
Only like 20 minutes long, 30 minutes long. But we would do that in the morning, then go to class, and then...
Well, so how'd you do in school?
Not so well.
I can't even imagine that. really.
Well, after the 3 years, I left Good Company and Fresno State and decided it was time for me to move to New York. I was ready to move.
Okay, so what, were you a big 22 years old?
Yeah. Yep, 22. Right. Mm-hmm. And I auditioned for the American Musical and Dramatic Academy mm-hmm. and got accepted.
Yeah,
and
right.
off I went.
Home, finally, right?
Home, finally home.
Right, okay. So how long were you there?
I was at AMDA for a year, and I did not finish the program because I booked my first national tour. So I had to leave the school.
Oh, dear.
And then I've been...
Well, wait a minute. What was your first national tour?
It was Smokey Joe's Cafe with Gladys Knight.
Oh, my God.
So that was... And I've been lucky enough to work since.
Unbelievable. Well, that's amazing. Well, okay. So here we have acting. We have... Oh, do you dance?
Yes.
Oh, well, you didn't mention dance, so did you study that anywhere?
Not until school.
Not until what school?
Until AMDA. But I did learn dance throughout the shows.
You did manage to, because you've been, some of these shows require dancing.
Oh, all of, yeah.
Right.
The one in particular, Crazy for You, which is an all-tap show.
Right.
I was not going to audition, and Dan Pisano said, why are you not auditioning? And I said, oh, well, you know, I don't tap.
Right.
I've never put a tap shoe on in my life. And he's like, oh, that's not a problem. And the choreographer, Kay Magaki, said, well, you know, just come in and learn a couple of steps. It's no big deal. There are roles in the show that don't dance.
Right.
So the cast list went up. I got cast.
Right.
As part of the cowboy trio. She's like, you guys don't have to dance. It's no big deal. 2 weeks go by. We get to the first day of rehearsal, and I'm dancing and everything. And I was mortified. She's like, don't worry. We have 6 weeks. By the time it opens, you'll know it. And after that show, I was like, well, I'm getting into a tap class. So I started. And now I've done a majority of tap shows.
Really?
Yeah.
God, yeah, I'm impressed.
And it's great. But because I have people to push me. Push me in to do it, so.
That's not why. I mean, really, you're just looking for people to push you. So, okay, so you, Smokey Joe's, and then did you stay in New York?
Yeah, I stayed in New York. The tour was
right
national, and I came home from New York, and, you know, when a show closes, well, I was on the road for a year and a half.
Oh, wow.
And so when it closed, you know, I got home and you missed the show.
Yeah.
And it, for me, I mean, we had a Grammy winner on our show, so that doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. So we were like, this is the most amazing thing, and now it's come to an end. I got to go audition for something else.
Well, it's almost like life is the show.
Yes, yes,
and
yes.
Then it's not life anymore.
And then it's not right. life anymore.
Right.
Normality is not... What you knew as normal is now abnormal.
Right.
So, I mean, even today, to have a house with a picket fence, it's no interest to me. None whatsoever. So I auditioned, and then I booked an international tour.
Oh, my.
So I was overseas for a year and a half. But it's just been, it's been a great, I don't know what this is. It's been a great journey.
So you start at the top with a national tour and then an international tour, mm-hmm. right? And it's the same thing, you know, this that seemed to be the natural way of being in the world for you, which is continual movement.
Yes.
You know, continual traveling, going from one thing to another, being requiring the, I don't know what the word is, expression of your talent.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Right.
And constantly getting it out.
Yes.
And having somebody receive it.
Yes.
It is constant. It's like an IV drip.
Yeah. Actually, talk a little bit about that.
First of all, there's nothing like it. And in training in theater, you're told the audience is the fourth wall. And depending on which schools you go to, I personally feel like the audience is the other character in the play. No matter what we're doing, I need to have the audience there. Not that I'm looking for, like, I want to look at them and see what they're thinking, but that energy's got to go somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who we do it for, so it's got to go to them. And when they're not there, like, even just in rehearsal, you can tell when, okay, it's time for an audience, because this is now going nowhere. So there's no point in doing it anymore,
because wow.
we're just doing it for ourselves now, and that's not the point of theater.
Right.
You got to share the feelings and the... So,
and also you get back.
And you get back.
Right.
And it's a call and response. It's a scene.
Right.
You're doing a scene with the audience. And when the scene partner's not there...
It's flat.
Exactly. It's totally flat. Perfect example.
Right.
Or perfect analogy. It's
okay. Flat. All right, good. So you come back, and I'm assuming, since you have to have this IV drip, that you go out again, or you
Absolutely.
Audition again, right?
Absolutely.
All right.
I will never get tired of auditioning. I am a firm believer in somebody is going to hear me sing this song today, and someone will hear me say this monologue today. Whether or not you like it, I'm sorry. If I don't get cast, that's okay. Like, I'm not one of those people who go home and like, oh, I didn't get the part. Nope. There's no time for that.
No, I got to audition.
Got to audition.
I got to do this thing that I do, right?
And auditioning is part of the job.
Yes.
That is part of your job.
And you like it.
I love it.
I know. I can see it. And that's how lucky for you.
Yeah.
So many people are apprehensive, and they're frightened, and they're angry, and they're this, and they're that. They don't like the auditioning, right?
No, they don't like it. It's also the instant self-gratification. Like, they want it to come right away.
Right.
And there's there are people who... Now that I've gotten older, there are people who move to the city all the time, or people who I have in my shows when I'm directing, and I just hear them talk. And they're like, oh, God, I've been in New York for 2 years and nothing's happened.
Yes, right.
I'm not on Broadway yet. I'm like, oh, sweet baby.
Right.
That the name of the game for me, mm-hmm. and I would hope other people who want to be serious actors or actresses, the name of the game is to continue to do your craft, whether it be in a regional theater, whether it be in Texas, Sarasota, on Broadway,
right.
in Europe, it doesn't matter. The fact that you get to do it
right.
should be what it's about.
Well, that's what it's always been for you.
Yeah.
Okay, so, you're here directing.
Yes.
So when did directing get into the mix?
Oh, some people aren't going to like this answer. People who are close friends of mine. It got into the mix when, for about a year and a half, I was musical directing a show in upstate New York. And I was sitting there in the pit at the piano, watching what was going on stage.
What was the show?
The show that changed it for me was Hairspray. Musical directing Hairspray. And I had worked on, at this point, I had worked on the show before.
Worked on it as an actor?
A musical director.
Yeah.
And the gentleman who was at the helm, the director, he was a lovely man. he's lovely. I was watching the actors just get extremely frustrated. And I was frustrated in the pit. And I just remember thinking, I don't know what he's talking about. That's not the show. Not that you have to do the original, but I'm like, that's not even close to what the show is. And I went home, and I thought about it. I was keeping a journal at the time. And I thought, could I have directed that show? And I guess like 2 weeks later, the answer was yeah. To me, the answer
yes,
was yes.
Right.
Not that his work was bad or anything. I just felt like, you know, I because of, going back to what we said earlier, that I like to know how all the parts
pieces
work.
Go together, right.
I figured, I was seeing things in this production. I'm like, but what if? But what if? And I kept asking those questions. And a friend of mine, I was telling this to a friend of mine over coffee, and she was like, those questions are the exact same questions directors ask. Like, way before the actors even step in. And I thought, well, I mean, give it a try. So, at this theater, I threw my name in to direct a show, and they said, sure. And then I thought, oh, what did I get myself into? but we had a lovely time.
What show?
The show was The Mystery of Edwin Drood.
Oh, my.
The very first one. And I loved it. I loved it. I had a blast. I'm still obsessed with the show. I was very young, so I would love to do it again, knowing what I know now.
Mm-hmm.
But it was definitely a stepping stone to put me...
Well, now we got director on the resume. And wait a minute. You know, you never did say how you became musical director. I mean, I understand that you play these instruments, but...
Musical director was a complete accident. I was... playing the piano was, for me, was a blessing and a curse in New York. So when people saw on my resume or saw that I played the piano, even I would be at callbacks and they'd be like, oh, Kenny, can you stay? I'm thinking I have a callback.
Right.
The pianist is not going to make this, so would you mind playing the next couple of auditions? And don't worry, we'll pay you, but do what you... And for... I'll do anything once.
Yeah.
And I was like, sure.
Right.
So then I started getting known as the guy who played the piano.
Right.
And then that sort of led to, could you come musical direct this? And then that led to musical director, which I did for about, maybe 3 or 4 years. But subsequently, my acting suffered. I wasn't being called in to audition for anything.
No.
So I had to decide what was more important to me, and it was killing me that I was not auditioning or on stage, so... musical director had to go.
Wow, amazing.
Yeah.
So, okay, so then we have, now we have director.
Mm-hmm.
So you do everything. Do you design sets?
I don't design sets.
Oh, good. All right, good.
I don't do costumes.
No, but you do everything that has to do with the performance aspect of theater.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So let's go to why you're here. Directing The Wiz.
I'm here directing The Wiz. Mr. Jacobs contacted me, and I was referred to him by John Bronson, who's our musical director, I believe. And I had directed the show before, three years ago. And we had a lovely talk, and I sent my resume in, and I got hired sight unseen. He hadn't met me.
Wow.
But we had a lovely talk on the phone, and I got the job, and I came down for the auditions in March, and I fell in love. I was here for 3 days, and I said, I love the space, I love the energy, I can't wait to start working. So I've been sitting on pins and needles since March, waiting to direct the show, and I'm glad I'm finally here.
Yeah, so how's it going? You want to tell us about the show? I mean, suppose, if there's somebody who hasn't seen it, you know,
if someone who hasn't seen it, it is an urban telling of The Wizard of Oz,
mm-hmm.
With great songs like Ease On Down the Road and Home. And It opened in 1975, I believe, January 1975. And it, at that time, was a direct social commentary on the African-American plight in America at that time through the telling of the Wizard of Oz. So there's lots of things going on. Right. But told in a very serial comic way, I think. And there's great dancing. There's great that these guys are great. They're going to dance their faces off. The voices are amazing.
Yeah.
I think it's just good storytelling. There's a story to be told, and I think that these guys tell it very... This cast tells it very well. They make my job easy.
Okay, so did you choreograph?
I choreographed it as well.
Oh, my God. Well, but you didn't musical direct.
I did not musical direct it. No. Okay. That would be just John Bronston.
Okay. All right. Okay, so, I have one more question.
Yes, ma'am.
And that is, having given a life to this work, and my God, you have given your entire life, virtually every minute of every day since you could, right?
Yeah.
What would you say about what that's like or what it's meant for you?
What it means to me, it's everything. If I woke up tomorrow and couldn't do this or any aspect of this, I honestly don't know what else I would do. I don't know what else I would do. I was born to be in the theater in some way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. This is my job. This is what I was put on this planet to do. And there's nothing else to that. That's just what it is.
It's a great place to stop. Thank you so much, Kenny Green.
Thank you so much.
Come on down and see the Wiz. This is my job. This is what I was put on the planet to do. And if tomorrow I couldn't do this anymore, I don't know what I would do. Okay, these are the words that you hear when the person speaking them is exactly who they are, who they were meant to be. This is what I was put on the planet to do. As I said in the run-up, Kenny is an exception to the rule of, if they don't like it, I give it up somehow. Kenny never gave it up. Kenny was so sure, so attached, so you might say obsessed with the thing that he discovered at the very beginning of his life, music, singing. How do they do that? What? Wait a minute, what is that spotlight? Is that a spotlight? Where is that coming from? That, the being intrigued by the how this happens. Piano, trumpet, whatever it occurred to him to do to enhance his connection to theater. No, I don't tap. Oh, well. Maybe I do. Oh, my God. Better take tap classes. This is what it sounds like when a person is absolutely certain that they are who they are. And they are not able to be dissuaded. This happens for some. If you were listening for the last couple of weeks, what you heard was two women who discovered very young a passion much like Kenny's, but were unable to hold on to it for a very long time in their life. And finally, fortunately for them and for us, they have recaptured it. They have resurrected this thing that they discovered about themselves very young. So Kenny is an exception, but it's glorious to hear what it sounds like when someone is able to discover their passion very early in life and then just enjoy the hell out of it for the rest of their life. But it is equally exciting to hear that one can recapture, one can resurrect, one can rediscover even something that one has forgotten. That's really the important thing here, that it's not too late
to be the person you really are. If you discover, if you notice, if you're aware that there are things that you wanted to do or want to do today but are unable to do. I used the example of, you know, if you said no when you were a child and you discovered in no uncertain terms that that was not going to go down well, you weren't going to be allowed to disagree or to say no to something. Well, it's difficult to live a life where you can't say no when you need to. And you certainly know that there are times when you would want to say, no, I don't want that, or I am not that, or don't do that. And something stops you. This is only one example, an important example, truly, but only one example of the ways in which people are discouraged from being themselves. And again, I need to say and say in every show, it may not be too late. In the example I just gave, to rediscover your ability to defend yourself, to say, no, I don't like that, I don't want that, don't do that. I'm not saying that stuff is easy to do, just because I said it and you say, oh yeah, really, I'd like to get that back. From now on, I'm going to say no when I mean it. It's not that simple, and certainly you know that. But it is not impossible. There are ways to recover the person you really are so that you can be it. Or in the case of Sanaya and Judy, whose interviews you heard in the last couple of weeks, to resurrect your connection to an art, to sing, to dance, to paint, to draw buildings, to whatever it was that turned you on and can still turn you on. So, as I also said earlier on, if you are aware that there's something that you might have had to surrender in your childhood, and you want to see if you can get it back, and you want to talk to me about that, please go up to my website, thelynshow.com, thelynneshow, thelynshow.com. Click on the email tab, ask me any questions that you might have. I'll be happy to hear from you. Okay, we're going to go out on one of the songs that Kenny mentioned that's a hit from the show called Home. And right before that, I want to say, as always, I hope you got something from this show that you can use, something that you didn't know that you know now, something that turned you on, something that inspired you, something that will bring you back, because I will be back next week, same time, same station, and as always, I sure hope you will be, too.
When I think of home, I think of a place where there's love overflowing. I wish I was home, I wish I was back there with the things I've been knowing. When that makes the tall grass leaning, suddenly the raindrops that fall have a meaning, sprinkling, see, makes it all clean. Maybe there's a chance for me to go back now that I and just maybe I can.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage? Let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang.